Session number 10767, room 14.
Mr. Joe Fitzpatrick, room 14. You were telling me the aftermath of being captured on March 21st.
Walking along this cobbled road, and there were some Jewish soldiers in the ditch on the left-hand side, and a voice said to me, "How's your hand, Sergeant?" So I turned round, and it was a German sergeant. He was in the medical corps, and what we call the RAMC. And, I said, "It's not so bad." So we got chatting, and he said, "Let me have a look at it." So I took it off, and of course it got a little bit dried a bit and crusted. So he said, "Oh, it'll be all right." He said, he bound it up again. He said, "Have you got another bandage?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, don't throw them away, because we only use paper, like toilet paper, you see. They put a pad on and then toilet paper," which acted very good. That did very good. You see how skint they were for stuff. You see, what with the embargo being on and whatnot. And he was starving at the same time, was Jerry, you know. And some of the soldiers that I passed and saw them, I thought, good God, deliverers. They'd all had uniforms that didn't fit them. So, I said, "You speak good English." He said, "I was 10 years in London." He said, "So, very good. Do you hope to get back?" He said, "Yes, I do." I said, "Well," I said, "I wish the best of luck." I said, "I mean that." And he said to me, I said, "Do you think you'll win the war?" "Well," he said, "if you get hold of Lloyd George, we will." I said, "You're right, you will, but you won't." I said, "Them Yanks will be jumping out of bed in Paris now from the birds." I said, they've got the buglers blowing them out. "Come to the cookhouse door, boys," I said. "They'll be getting out of bed now knowing that you're making an advance." I said, "It'll be too many for you." I said, "But I wish you the very, very best of luck." He said, "Thank you. Same to you." Oh, he said, I said, "Will you have a cigarette?" He said, "No." He said, "And make them last, because it'll be a long while before you get any more." See? So I said, "Thank you very much." And I'm going along, and there was a village, and there was a Jerry. I don't know if he was doing this rifle, but he kept shooting into a pile of mud. I don't know if he was trying to clean the pile or not. And there was a little cottage, broken down cottage, with an old lady stood at the door with an apron pinny on, and she's crying. So I went to her. I said, "Très bien. Victory." "We?" I said, we. And she said, and like that, it was prayers, and bonjour. And then I walked along, and I eventually come getting on then.
You weren't escorted at all then?
Nobody interfered with me. Nobody touches you.
Were there any other British POWs doing
this? No, nobody.
So you were just on your own?
I was the only one that had any sense.
They were all staying up near?
Well, because they were waiting for orders.
And you wanted to get back to get out of the...
Certainly.
Out of the what? The artillery zone? Or?
Out of their way, no. Certainly. You don't want to be hanging about where there's danger. So I said... nobody interfered with me. When I saw that general, there was a little bit of a valley, and I bet you there was a dozen bloody aeroplanes in that valley. Small aeroplanes, ready to take off for observation. Oh, I had it all set, you know, but he'd no chance.
So what happened next then?
Then I walked along, and I eventually come to a barn. And I went into this barn. It was full of one or two of our fellas, and mostly Jerry's. And then I was on a stillage, and I felt sick. So I said to myself, "Oh, I'll have to get out." So I got out through a little wicky door and stood against the wall, wiping the sweat off me. And when I recovered, I went back again. I had to stretch over a stretcher. And there was a jerry tied down to it. And he had cotton wool around his private. And he had a straw sticking up. And the water was bubbling over like a kettle boiling. And I said, poor bugger, he'll not last long. And there was nobody attending to him or anything. They'd attended to him as best as they could. But he wouldn't, I don't think he'd last very long, but anyhow, there's a poor bugger. And he'd been tied down so that he couldn't be do any further damage. So anyhow, I got back on my stillage, and the next morning I got on a lorry. And the next stop was Lee Coteau. And there's an hospital there. And second day I was there, a fella come and said, are you Sergeant Fitzpatrick? So I said, yes. Lieutenant so-and-so would like to see you. I said, oh, is he in this? So I went, and he was Lieutenant so-and-so. So he said, where did you get it? I said, I got it through the fingers, I said. Oh, I said, where did you get it? He said, in the stomach. Well, I wasn't very pleased to see him, in the sense of speaking. I don't know whether I'm cheeky or not or anything like that. But I never had much to do with it. And in fact, I don't think I'd ever spoken to the chap. He come to us when we were in France. And I do know that he, in sport, he was a bit of a cracker in certain sport. But and I know the county he came from. But anyhow, I was very disappointed. I think we could have done better.
What do you mean? Why didn't you want to see him? I don't quite understand.
Because the simple reason, we should have stopped him. When we got him there en masse, we should have blown him to bloody pieces.
But that wasn't this junior officer's fault, was it? It was only his...
It was a general's fault.
I mean, why did you blame this lieutenant?
You see, what it amounted to this, that, like I say, we were sacrificed, and it didn't matter about being sacrificed, but we were sacrificed, and the general knew very well that Jerry would be extended.
But why did that...
Wait a minute. He knew that it would be extended, that the doors would run themselves, and it'd be useless. But which was a good point.
Why did that make you cross with this lieutenant? He was in the...
Oh, well, I don't want to say, you see, because... And it's the truth. I don't want to condemn anybody.
So it was something that had happened during the fighting?
I told you what it was. I've told you. I don't want to name him.
I don't know. I don't want you to name him, but you haven't told us why.
Well, if I do... Yeah, I'd have to tell you his name.
Not really. You can just say he's an officer.
An officer.
And what did he tell now?
Yeah, well, that's leading up to his name being told.
No, you don't need to tell me his name.
Oh, well, fancy getting an order to come up with 20 men. And you walk straight into a bloody trap.
It was that officer. Yeah. You said that, yes. And that was what was annoying you.
Yeah. Why didn't he retire? No disgrace in retiring. He that runs away to fight another day.
So what happened next? You were in this hospital. Was your wound treated at all?
Never looked at. Not until I'd left. Then they never opened it. You see, if I'd have, said, gone to the orderly, I said, have a look at this, you see. But he was doing all right as it was, you see. He was stuck together, you see, and it had gone through two, and the little one was hanging off, you see, and they were comfy as they are, and they recovered in that way, see. If that bullet had been 6 inches to my middle, it'd have got me in the groin. I'd have been in the War Graves Commission. So anyway...
Your wound wasn't looked after, but had you had a drink yet? Because you said you had problem getting food.
Not until I got to Leek at all. 2 days after.
Was that just from the confusion, or do you think it was deliberate?
They can't attend to everybody. They can't say, "Here, have a cup of tea." No.
So when you got to the Leek at all,
I had a cup of tea and there's a cup of coffee which was made of furs, you know, the corns and that. Stew that up and serve it as coffee. No, it's a funny thing. You might have had it. I might have had a drink of water. I don't know. Can't recollect. But as regards food, I never had any food for 48 hours after. You got used to those long spells. You got used to them.
So you see,
I discarded me haversack and them, you see. But if I'd have known he was coming, I'd have saved me haversack, see. And he carried me bits of ration there and tin of bully and whatnot, see. But you don't think of these things. You get used to it, going a long spell without anything to eat. But when we got there, as I say, now, at Leek at all, I have been to Leek at all a few months ago, and of course it's all built up, and the old hospital isn't there, there's a new one. But any road, I got on the train and finished up, we touched, what's the name, Luxembourg there, and coming down that side and crossing Cologne there, and across the Rhine Bridge, and we sailed along to Munster.
You sailed along?
Well,
on the train?
Yeah. Our sentry that was on, he'd been wounded, and there was about seven of us in, eight altogether with him, and I got hold of his rifle, the Morser. I'd never had hold of the Morser before, and a good examination, and he'd hell of a sight heavier than our rifles. Oh, a lot heavier. Clumsy thing it was, and you know, I opened the magazine, and there's no bullet, no ammunition in it. People see them on the television now walking round with it on their arm and walking round the bloody yard with it, and people think, oh, there's a sentry, he's got a gun and he's got whatnot, and he's got nothing of the sort.
They didn't think, obviously from the way he let you take his rifle and the fact it wasn't loaded, they didn't think you were liable to escape then?
You're not a cat in hell's chance, had you? Had you? Really? Not a cat in hell's chance of escaping. Give you any grub. I mean, say, we stopped at certain places for some sauerkraut, which give you the runs, and that. And then we finish up at Munster. Now, this is exciting, this. See? So, we're at Munster, and we had a parade, and the doctor come round with a bird. He had a bird with him, a woman doctor. And when he looked at my hand, he went, ha-ha-ha, you know, as if I'd put it over my bloody head and caught a bullet. See? And I thought, good job he didn't know what I thought. Silly devil. Anyway, bandage, put the bandage on again. Only needed the one bandage, you see. And let it go and let it crust and let it fall apart and let it fill in. And it cured itself. See? And you can just discern now, after 70 years, little apples grow again, don't they? Anyway, we got to this Munster, and it was a very nice place, and big hospital.
And you went to the Munster Hospital then?
Munster, yes. Lazarette. That's German for hospital, did you know? Nicht sprechen Sie Deutsch? Nein. Oh, yes, it's very amusing, you know. So, anyway, after that, we went into a room. And we took everything off, and any leather goods you put at one side, and you tied your for your paybook and all your belongings that you have out of your pocket, cigarette case and all that. And they call out, they give you a hook, the hand clothes on, you know, and there'd be two desks on. Well, they'd save one, and you put all your clothing on, and give it him back, and then there was a big boiler, and rods came out. So they put the clothes on the hooks on the desk, and then shoved it through, and your clothing was all fumigated then, see? And you went into a place, and there was about eight or so barbers there, fellas with open razors, and you stood there, and they shaved every hair off any part of your body, ears, eyes, nose, or anything. And you had a close crop, and what struck me was there was a fella there, and he just looked like a big bear, all hairs, you know, hairs all over him. And I thought, good God, what a bloody job the fella's got here to shave him. Anyhow, he eventually cut his hair short and used it as only just damp water on, you know, and turned him upside down and shaved every hair off, and he's just stood there like a new big newborn baby. So, anyhow, we're all there just the same, you know. So we moved from there into another room, and a foot deep it was, lowered, and there was showers. So, of course, they turned the showers on, and you went under them and give yourself a good rub, and if there was any soap, which was very little, I just managed to get a rub of it on my head. And then for about half a minute, they put a bit of warm water on, and then back to the cold, and you got out and you got dried as best you could, you see. And you went into another room, and that was the other side of this oven that they'd done the fumigating. Out would come the clothes, steaming. They shout the numbers out, and you put the other disc on and take it off, put it one side, and then shake your clothes, and then get dressed. So you was...
And this was the reception at the Munster Lazaret, not the prison camp?
This is at the hospital.
At the hospital, yes.
Yes, Lazaret. Yes. I've not got to the prison yet.
So what happened now?
Jumping the gun, you know. So, any road, we got dressed, and we'd been another 24 hours before we got on the train again, and we finished up at a place called Salto, S-O-L-T-A-U, Salto. And a nice little village it was. I believe today it's a big junction, railway junction. One day I may go. We got there, and quite a bunch of us, and walking cases, and we walked up the road. Oh, they gave us at the hospital, they gave us a pair of sabots, wooden clogs, see? And so I thought to myself, I hope I don't have to use them, because you shuffle along and your feet would get blistered and chaffed in them. But anyway, I carried them round my neck and walked up this here road and across the railway siding and up through this cobbled road for nearly 4 miles. And we come to this here big lager, they call them lagers, and it was divided in two by a road. And it would take 250,000 prisoners if it was full up, but it wasn't quite full up. And in there was every nationality, including folk and beans, probably Chinese, that worked on the roads in France. And French, Belgium, Italians, everything, everybody, English. And Russians in galore. And I was in the this hut with the ordinary Tom, Dick and Harry's.
Were all the prisoners mixed up?
No. Wait a minute. I was with the Tom, Dick and Harry's, you know, and one night I thought I'll have to go to the toilet. Well, the toilet was about 150 yards from the hut, and it was a moonlight night. And I was in my shirt and underpants, airy underpants, you know, and I was strolling along this elevated road, and I just bent my head and let my underpants drop, and by the time I'd finished, I just pulled my underpants up and trotted back again. I was scared stiff of my shoes being, boots being pinched. I'd buried them, you know, see? And that is the way I visited the toilet that night. I did a running jump. And I got back again because that sauerkraut, well, they could do away with the number nines. Give them a bowl of sauerkraut. And the next day, I was taken away and I was put among the NCOs that was in the camp. And there'd be somewhere about 30 to 40 of us. The corporals, sergeants, all regiments.
So the first hut you'd been in had just been British other ranks, had it? Privates?
Yes, the first hut. The first hut, you mean? Yes. I was with the Tom, Dick and Harry's.
But all British?
Yes, aye. Well, they'd be sent out on working parties. See, but he respected their sergeants upwards, corporal sergeants, and we respected theirs. Anyway, we got to this other hut. It was across the road, and we had a big football field there. They wanted to blade the grass on it. And the laundry was at the other side of the road, main road. And we used to play football every Sunday.
Right. Now, can I just ask you a bit about the actual hut and the condition?
Oh, definitely.
What was the hut like? Could you describe it?
Well, yes. It was a very big hut. And it was split into four. See?
How was it split? I mean...
Well, the partition, see? So you'd four sections for that one big hut, see, with one door to go in, see? Door there for that one, door there for that, and the same at the back, see? Got me? Right. And I was with a corporal out of the London regiment, and we were with two Belgians, and one was named Quartermaster Sergeant Joseph Brazier, of the 10th Line Regiment, Belgian, and the other one was a sergeant.
How many men would there be in the hut altogether?
Bloody hell. Well, there was a lower deck and an upper deck. We slept on the upper deck, because we had to climb down in the morning to go out and whatnot, and which was most of the warmer one, and out of any drafts. And I should say there'd be about 50 men in each quarter.
Each quarter, and the hut was in quarters.
Yes, 200 for one hut.
And what were your beds like? They were two-deckers, were they?
No, they were the boards, the floor. You slept on the floor, boards. No decks, no nothing raised or anything. You slept on that. Unfortunately, Joseph, he worked in the Joseph Brassier, the finest man I ever met. He used to bring us two clean sheets every week and attend to the blankets being cleaned and whatnot, and we got into bed with a blanket underneath us and one on the top of two sheets.
So they supplied you with blankets?
Yes, well, that's all, but not with sheets.
This Belgian friend of yours?
But not with sheets.
So was there any heating in the huts?
Only with what you're cooking with.
And what were you cooking with?
Yes. Every school, call it, every school had a pipe through the boardings, and if you wanted to keep warm, sit round that, you could if you could get the wood or the coal, you see. But we were never without a fire because Joseph was in the know.
Joseph, so you did have a stove?
Yes, we cooked. He cooked the food. We had one meal a day.
I'll come back to it. So that's your cooking arrangement was your heating arrangement. That's
yeah, yes, and with tin plates.
Now, how much space would you have on the floor? I mean, how much space would be yours? I mean, that you'd lie down in, or were you all cramped up together?
Well, about 2 yards, a yard and a half wide.
And where would you put your personal possessions, what you had left?
Under your head, under the straw, what's the name? Filler. Underneath there.
Now, you mentioned the latrines. What did the latrines look like?
Well, the machines that went on the outside wall. And they stretched for at least 100 yards, over 100 yards. And they were 6 feet wide, 6 feet deep, concrete, trench. And then the slotted parts for sitting on was carved out. And there was a couple of yards was the hoarding. See, and every nation, the British had a section of its own, certain amount, French, Belgian, and then down here, Russians, see, and every now and again when they were cleaning it out, they'd found at least half a dozen or a dozen bodies in. The Russians going down there and they were weak and whatnot, they fell in a trough. And then when they were clearing it out, you could smell it 100 miles away, and that's what we used to use. And every Sunday, they used to come in of a Friday night, and probably have a shower, and then on the Monday morning they'd be off back to where they were doing work and whatnot.
The people who cleaned it?
No, the prisoners, Russian chiefly, see, or one or two English, they'd go on commando work, what they call commando, you see, and they'd go on to their what jobs they were doing, you see, and quite a lot of English and French and Belgian and National, they had certain administration jobs, you know, you see, to combat, to keep up the records.
I'll come back to that. These latrines, who would actually clean them?
The jerrys would clean them, or they'd get a group of the prisoners to squirt it out, see? Each section always had a place where they put a notice. But we never put one up, the British, but we always went and read the French one. And if the king coughed in England a certain time, we'd hear it.
I'll come back to that. What about the laundry building? You said there was a laundry building.
Yes. Well, of course, that was for the main body of for the hospital and these different things that require laundry work, you know. Well, some of the fellas would be working in the laundry.
It wouldn't be for your clothes, it was for the hospital?
You see, once I was there, you see, and I'd been fumigated, and I'd been shaved, and I was using my Harrison's pomade, the only thing that disturbed me was in the night was a flea bite now and again. So that wasn't so bad.
But where did you get your clothes washed?
Well, our car, it only wanted a good brushing and it was clean.